Welcome to the Concordia Publishing House podcast, where we consider everything in the light of Jesus Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I'm your host, Elizabeth Pittman. As a community of faith, we are called to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly for the sake of our neighbors. We're joined today by Dr. Mark Koshman to discuss what this life of service looks like in the city. Mark is the chairperson of the Department of Theology at Concordia University, St. Paul. Hi there.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're glad you could be here. How are things on campus?
We're meeting class in person. We had snow this morning, and even given the pandemic, it's been great to connect with our students and just live life together with them. There's a lot on everybody's plate, especially for the students. But I would say that everybody's pretty optimistic and working hard, and we're all going to need to learn how to use Zoom very, very well.
I think we're going to be zoomed out by the end of all of this, but I know that the students have to be glad to be back together in person because it's so hard to be isolated and on your own when you're trying to learn and study and be in community with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the groups of students that I was working with, it's kind of a mentoring program. There's 24 students and we split them into four different groups. And then up until this last weekend, we were meeting outside. I bought a bunch of lawn chairs and we would just sit outside because we could have that face-to-face conversation safely outdoors. And we are going to do it at least once in the snow, mostly for the photo op. It might be a short session, but it should hopefully look good. So look for that in our social media feed. It's going to get posted.
Absolutely. You know, maybe you could put a bonfire, like a fire pit, and have a little fire going and some s'mores while you're having class. That could be kind of fun.
We're thinking about doing something like that. Should be good.
Our weather's a little better here. It's still sunny. And so winter has not struck us yet. So you can keep the snow as far as I'm concerned. I'm not ready for it. Well, I'm glad you could be with us today to have this conversation because I think it's an important topic that we're seeing a lot in our society today. But before we jump into that, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to develop your academic interests and the programs you're doing?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. So I grew up outside of Chicago in the suburbs. I went to a Lutheran school through eighth grade. And then I went to a very, very large public high school. And at first I had some trepidation about this. I ran cross country. I soon had the nickname of Rev because everybody knew I wanted to be a pastor. Primarily though, like I ended up praying with people quite a bit because in high school you go through all sorts of stuff. And we even had some rather tragic events at different times. And it was kind of like, I just found myself being pulled into some conversations for prayer, just simply to listen. So that was a great experience for me. And it was a very diverse high school experience, even out in the suburbs of Chicago, a lot of religious diversity. And this has served me well now because one of the classes I teach is Christianity and World Religions. So having those like lived experiences and having friends who were Hindu and Muslim actually good friends who came over and, you know, I brought a couple of them to church with me. Like we would talk about faith and religion quite a bit. So that really helped shape me. And then the other piece that really, shaped me was just thinking through, being part of the suburbs of Chicago in this larger metropolitan region. I had a lot of friends who then went off to live in the city, part of this like movement of gentrification of young people and professionals going back into the city. I was always intrigued by that. And I wanted to explore like how Christian faith, like what opportunities were there for them. And sometimes they would say, I think this was maybe just because they were, I don't know, college age and young adults, like, oh, there really aren't churches here in the city. And several years later, when I did my dissertation, I was looking at churches in Chicago, Protestant and Catholic churches, some Lutheran, but all the different denominations, and discovered that there's quite a few churches in Chicago, even though unfortunately and somewhat sadly for us in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have lost many of our churches, have closed and moved outward. But there are other churches that are there. And so that was a really enriching experience for me to see the faith and the life and the lived worship experience of so many Christian churches in Chicago years later when I started to do my doctoral work and my research in Chicago.
That's an interesting background. I know I have family from the Chicago area. A lot of my friends from college were from Chicago and moved into the city. So I'm kind of familiar with what you're describing. And it is really heartbreaking to see our churches leaving the city, because we definitely are needed there. And I think we'll get into some of that conversation as we go along. So you've done a lot of study on urban outreach, correct? So yep. beyond your dissertation, you've been on the ground. So this isn't just academic for you. This is like you've had your boots on the ground, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, this has always been really important to not just be in the academic world and reading books, of which, of course, I love books tremendously, but really, like, how does this shape the lived experience of people? So when I went to seminary in St. Louis, Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, I was assigned to do fieldwork at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church, which is in North County, St. Louis. And, you know, right away it was evident, I have a real close relationship with Ted Lesh, who's the senior pastor mm-hmm. there. He preached his first sermon at my dad's church in Chicago. And I preached my first sermon as a field worker at Chapel of the Cross. So there's just, our families have known each other for quite a few years. So there's this really warm and trusting relationship from the get-go. And we immediately started to wrestle with the challenge of what does our congregation do when it's about 70% white, 30% African-American, but in a neighborhood that's about the opposite. About 30% white and 70% African-American. For those of you who are familiar with St. Louis, there's a lot of, a lot of integrated neighborhoods. There's also different pockets of neighborhoods. It's not a real clean, there is segregation and in many ways still kind of the remnants of segregation. But there's a lot of different overlap. And so how do we as a church interact with this, and how do we better reach the neighborhood? And I remember one conversation in Pastor Lesh's office. I was a first year student, and I was like, there's got to be some book, that was immediately there must be some book that just explains this. And we're like, no, not really. Like you're going to have to learn this on the ground. Right. So I started a summer camp there, which really reached into the neighborhood. We had over 100 kids from the community year after year. And, I just started doing, my fieldwork experience. We ended up doing quite a few awesome ministries, including the Sidewalk Sunday School Ministry, where we'd go into kind of apartment complex neighborhoods, and we'd essentially do church, kind of a vacation Bible school church, just there in the neighborhood. And so in total, I was there about 8 years. And once I became ordained in 2011 as a pastor, they called me as their pastor for mission and outreach. And so I started my doctoral work at St. Louis University in American Studies, looking at religion, race, and the city, while also serving part-time as a pastor. So for me, this has always been integrated together. How do I connect, and how does my experience on the ground really, really shape that, the work that I do? And it's pushed me to ask other questions. Sometimes people ask, like, why were you, my actual doctoral work is in American Studies. And, it's like, well, why would you look at American Studies, not theology? Or, I said, I was doing tons of theology. It's just, I was applying it to what I've always felt to be some of the most pressing and challenging questions in our world today. Like, how do we understand the city? How do we understand racial division, and how can we work for racial reconciliation? I think that's where our theology needs to be and can do so in some great ways. And along the way, there were tremendous mentors to me, people who also kind of served on the ground and kind of guided me in this conversation. So yes, this has always for me been very much intertwined together.
I'm familiar with the neighborhoods you're talking about with Chapel of the Cross. Actually, Pastor Lesh's wife, Mary, is one of our editors here at CPH. So I'll be sure to go over and tell her that she needs to listen to this episode.
Awesome. Okay.
When we're done. It's really neat to hear those stories. And I've heard similar tales from other communities of pastors like yourself who, got onto the ground and really got to know their neighbors and be part of the neighborhood there. And I think it's so important to be there in community with the people around you. As we go deeper, explain to us how urban outreach may differ from, what we often think of as evangelism or outreach. Where are there similarities and where are there differences?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have found that many of us have approached urban ministry from a missionary standpoint. And maybe that's because missionaries, like who are serving abroad, are the most eager and willing to take risks and get into communities that might be less familiar to many of us. But I think there are, what I learned in my studies was that we're significantly overlooking, if our only focus is on evangelism and tactics for evangelism and sharing the gospel, all good things, we do overlook some of the urban history, which is really what I focused on. And I taught 3 years of courses on this, of urban history at St. Louis University while a graduate student, which was simply how have the decisions and policy decisions in American history shaped the urban context? And really getting a sense of that language of the city, that history of the city is vitally important for understanding when you walk into a community. And I think also, I mean, a key part of this is the racial tension that we experience. Right now, there's this push, as we've talked about, for gentrification. Oftentimes, middle or upwardly middle class white individuals going back into the city. I have a really good friend here who's a urban pastor, and he was starting a church in a community of color here in St. Paul. And at the local coffee shop where, he knew to go because that's where all the real conversation in the community happened, he was immediately confronted, 20 years ago, you went to Ben here. Because it wasn't affluent, it wasn't on the up, it was declining. And so there was this immediate reaction what are you doing here as a white pastor starting a church? We already have our churches. I think in that for me has been an important learning thing. We sometimes assume like the city needs churches. My research uncovered that there are tons of churches. Just because there isn't an LCMS church in the community doesn't mean that there aren't really great and wonderful and faithful Christian churches. So as we think about urban outreach, how is this different? Or why do we need a more specific skill set? That's because when we're encountering the city, there's so many other policies and contexts and history that just has to be unpacked for us to understand. And even kind of a language, just like if you're preparing to do mission work abroad, you've got to know the language of the city and what different terms mean. And I find that even in our church body, we can sometimes fall into this trap of, we'll say something. I one time in a paper early on wrote, and I made some reference to thugs. And it was, for my part, I meant it very innocently, just like these guys were thugs. But then when I learned, thugs has a real racialized context to it. And to simply say that brings up a whole host of images and reactions among people. So we have to be careful about our words. And it's just simply so we can be effective. We've got to understand how what language means and the racialized way language has been used in our cities. And unfortunately, this is a rather intractable problem, but we've got to stay engaged with it. And I could give other examples later on. About how just there are certain things that we assume, and that's the challenge. We need to have a good understanding of the history of the context. Even when we understand civil unrest. And in 1967, the Kerner Commission was released about how Americans responded to the civil unrest with the rioting in Detroit. And even just how that the rioting in Detroit is defined or explained shifts depending upon which group we're talking about. And this Kerner Commission in 1967 is still in many ways the blueprint or the guide by which people evaluate civil unrest. So when I look at this historic document and I look at the current context, whether it's 2014 in Ferguson or 2020 here in Minneapolis, as we deal with civil unrest, that people's responses have not changed. There's kind of three really clear camps. And if we don't understand that or even understand where that language emerged from or kind of the patterns we fall into, then we're not able to really help shape and shift the culture and the neighborhood. Because obviously we want to share the gospel. We want people to come to know who Jesus is. But people are going to evaluate evaluate our message based upon whether or not we're showing up. Are we in the community? Are we sacrificing for the community? Are we present there? And we've got to demonstrate that, not just say something nice, here's the gospel and move on, but to really, share the gospel, proclaim what God is doing in the city, and then live that out.
That's so important. And I think we need somewhere to start. Can you unpack a couple of those assumptions that we may make that are just wrong and that are hindering us from making true connections?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, there's so many different ways that we could go. And
we could probably go for hours on this, but I think for our listeners, like, to have a few places that we can immediately go, oh, I was wrong here, or this was a misconception on my part. Where can we start to understand each other by breaking down some of those assumptions?
Yeah. Okay. So for those of us who are white and middle class, I would say we certainly need to listen, and we need to make sure that people are in the conversation. I was recently in a conversation, and of all white individuals, and we were discussing the term diversity. And the assumption was diversity means so many different things, and it can kind of get people jazzed up. So we need to pull that out. We don't want to use any marketing materials with the word diversity in it to our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And there was that conversation, if there was a person of color in that conversation, would have found it tremendously humiliating or discouraging or just devastating to be like, wait, what do you mean? Like, I don't belong here, you know? And so sometimes we use words and we're like, well, diversity means something in our head. And if we had a broader group of people who are in some of these meetings and some of these conversations, or even at the church, who are thinking through, how do we convey a message, then we wouldn't kind of trip ourselves up over this. So that might be one example that sometimes people think diversity, or I've even looked at some of the polls that have shown, like, whether you even conceive of race as a problem. Pew Research and Barna Research have done some good work on this. In general, white people tend to, like 70% or so, tend to think that too much attention is given to racial concerns. And it's the opposite for people of color. It's just assumed that this is a challenge. And there's nothing more frustrating to a person of color to say, like, well, let's not talk about diversity, or, you know, let's not actually focus on racial justice right now. It's just not convenient. We need to just lead with things that are going to be more winsome. And I'm all about being winsome, and I'm very much about proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. But we have to also deal with the fact that we might be perpetuating inequalities. Or the things that we say could really be hurtful to people. And so I've just tried to illustrate that with those examples of how can we listen more, be more empathetic, and not jump to conclusions. Another, I guess, if I'm going to keep going here on topics, I mean, there's a distinction that should be made between Black Lives Matter as a movement and their platform. And I've had people send me, like, well, there's no way we agree with this platform. And they send me the website. For sure. Like, I totally get it. I'm not endorsing any political platform, especially one that's put out on the internet. But for us as Christians to say that Black Lives Matter, like, as a statement, right? That just like white lives matter, police lives matter, people's lives matter. That's a theological statement to say that there's value to our lives. Because God has created us and redeemed us in Jesus Christ. So, sometimes there's this immediate reaction of not wanting to talk about Black Lives Matter, but that can be interpreted by some of saying, oh, then you're just saying, like, my life doesn't matter.
So as Lutherans, we live in the tensions, right?
For sure.
And on this topic that you're going down, you see it happen where you see there's two sides often. And one side will be on the side of, our lives matter. There's been systemic discrimination, racism, you name it, happening on one side. And then you have another side who will see, in the case of some of the civil unrest that has happened, where a side will say, well, actions have consequences. And if you're going to break the law, there's consequences for that. How do we come together and not be so intractable on either side, but have those consequences to understand there has been systemic problems? And yes, we do have sin in the world. Do you see where I'm going with this? There's this tension here. How can we as Christians have a healthy conversation about where we are and where we need to go.
Yeah, that's great. I think certainly the we live in this tension, and I think I would say that we need to not dismiss someone's legitimate concern by throwing out some other legitimate concerns. The way you even set it up, this is exactly how it goes. Saying like, well, sure, there have been, you know, racist things that have been done in the past, but look at what's going on with protesting in our cities, and that's not right. Therefore, it equals itself out. And that actually just means that Christians are stepping back from the conversation instead of engaging it. So, you know, the other way that it's often said is like, well, why are we worried about, blacks being shot and killed by a white police officer? What about black on black crime? What about blacks killing blacks? Well, I've been in the Austin neighborhood in Chicago. I was doing research at a church where a 9-year-old girl was shot and killed randomly. Like, she was doing her homework in her room. And I mean, I was there for the whole summer. And there was a guy outside just like shooting off his gun to make a scene with other guys. And this girl doing her homework in her room just gets shot because it goes right through the window. So I've been in communities of color where there is hurt and pain. And for sure, they are taking it seriously. And this was a Baptist pastor at this one church. And he said, we're going to be out on the street every single day, making sure that our neighborhoods are safe. And so here again, it's an example of like, we're like, let's dismiss the problem by saying, well, there's this other problem. And for me, and I think for many, and it's not, you know, in our church body and in other churches who are doing urban ministry, we see that there's a lot of work that's being done in these contexts. And we shouldn't just cancel out legitimate concerns with some other legitimate concern. Plus, it gets really complicated. What is a protester? You know, we have, you know, what I think of a protester might be very different than what many of our listeners are thinking of as a protester, because we immediately kind of demonize or dehumanize certain people if we don't like them. So for me, as it really happened at Chapel of the Cross, I was shaped not by a political agenda. I didn't actually even really want to study this. It just kind of kept coming at me, and it was pastoral. It was listening to the members of my church, white members and black members of all ages, and listening to the kids and to the teenagers talking about their struggles and how racism, you know, showed a real ugly side in their life, and to the older members of the congregation who grew up as kids, you know, being afraid of being lynched in the South, and how their parents would send them up to St. Louis or to Chicago to get away. Like, those were the stories that, you know, another common thing people will sometimes say, I think I probably even said it myself before I really dove into all of this, was, let's just get over it. Let's embrace the future. Like, why do we still need to talk about the civil rights movement? Well, this is still going on. Like, this is the lived experience of people. And it's not that long ago. So again, I would just say, like, as we live in tension, let's not cancel things out. And if we're uncomfortable about something, as Christians, I think we might maybe just need to repent. Sometimes there's things we need to, it might create a reaction amongst us. We need to repent instead of just like immediately going defensive, saying like, well, what about this problem? For sure, there are plenty of urban problems that we need to address and that Christians are called to address. So that's where I really like to see us engage more and listen more and show more empathy instead of just going on the defensive route, which unfortunately seems to be a rather common tactic.
You're right. And it seems to be, you know, our online world seems to exacerbate that quite a bit. You mentioned politics and the political system. You know, we just have come through election season. It's not resolved yet. And so there's a lot of talk on that. What dangers do we run into as Christians when we look to the political process to try to affect change in our communities?
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to actually push back initially, and then I'll get to the question right about like the dangers, because I think that is maybe the common approach. We assume that the political process is dangerous. So one of my advisors, his grandfather was an LCMS pastor. He's a professor at St. Louis University. He said, as we study urban history, we realize that regular people, human people, maybe even sometimes making the best judgment at the time, have created the conditions of our cities, but it is not inevitable. Like, we assume, I think sometimes, that like, this is just the way it's going to be. And history actually shows that it's not the case. people have, because of policies, because of politics, because of movements like the civil rights movement, of which the church, the Christian church, was a significant, had a significant role in the civil rights movement and its success, especially in really leading towards reconciliation and a lot of the things that, you know, a more forward-looking way of engaging with society and its problems instead of the reactionary way that you sometimes have with either Black power or then counter movements of white power. But the civil rights movement, you know, led by the church, was a way to kind of move us towards reconciliation. But there was legislation that was passed. So I would say initially, like, there is actually a tremendous amount of value and work that needs to be done in the political world. And as Christians, as we live out our vocations, we've got to jump into that and support each other in that. Now, for sure, as you said in your question, there are dangers, and maybe especially right now, there's a danger because we live in such a politicized world. I'd say the biggest danger for us is the church, and I really impress this upon my students who are going into church ministry, church work, is that we can trade what is penultimate, you know, a political idea or a desire for what is ultimate. And so what is actually ultimate for us as Christians is the Christian gospel, is what God does for us in Jesus Christ. And the hope that we have that God is going to remake us and renew us, and through calling us to repentance and to belief, Jesus is able to, you know, forgive and really save and rescue. And so for us as Christians, when we're engaged with policies and politics and urban stuff, I think we do so as people of hope, knowing that, like, I can give it my best shot, and I still know that at the end of the day, God's going to be the one who brings about salvation, redemption. So the danger is that when we can invert those two, when we somehow think that the gospel is just going to help me so I can accomplish a political end, that can be dangerous. And it can also be dangerous because maybe we're wrong. You know, maybe what we think is like the right policy is actually wrong. Or we think a certain individual, a political office or candidate is like going to be the right person. And maybe it's not. Like, and so we don't want to. The danger is that we can make those things more ultimate. And that happens on the left and on the right. Everybody can kind of get pushed that way. So how do we always go back to the scriptures? When we talk about justice, how do we have a biblical sense of justice, not a secular or worldly sense of justice? And how do we keep as the main message, the main message, right, about what God has done for us in Jesus? And then I really use Martin Luther's Freedom of Christian to kind of anchor this theologically for myself and for people as I interact with them in communities. How does Luther's emphasis in freedom of a Christian is all about how because of Jesus, we're completely free. And then as free people, we're completely free to serve. And so I think the motivation shifts from one of being driven out of guilt, like white guilt or frustration or about achieving something in the city. And it's far more about how we are free in Christ to now freely serve. And as that kind of functions as our motivation and as our guiding perspective, we're able to bring a lot more to the table, I think, politically, with policies, and then in all of our different vocations.
And as we go forward, and you underscored this very, very well, and I would have been better served to have phrased the question differently, but if we're going to use the political process, it should be for the good of our neighbor. And if the good of our neighbor is at the front of our mind in all of our actions, we're going to be far better off across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very, very well said. And it's all about, yeah, how do we serve our neighbor? Yeah.
So how can we do more?
I think we should, and this is what's fun about being at a university, we should really continue to talk more and more about vocation. And lift up, I think, in the church, all the different ways in which people can live out how God has led them to their skills and their interests to serve other people. So, you know, actually early on, you asked me, like, how did I come, you know, what was my interest in urban outreach and how did I come to all of this? The other main motivator and kind of conversation partner I've had with throughout all of this has been my wife, Kara. She's a pediatric nurse practitioner. And she worked at the St. Louis County Health Department. So I was pastor at Chapel of the Cross and doing graduate school. And she was with the County Health Department. And seeing her live out her vocation and she was in North City, St. Louis, at the clinics there, the county health, well, at the county, but then they were partnering with some of the city in North City, right along that border there. seeing her just do her job day in and day out. And then also, man, she shared the gospel with people. She prayed with people. And she got real with folks, and she had to speak the law sometimes to people of like, you know, this is not going to be healthy for you or for your kids, you know, and any number of different things. And so how can we as a church continue to equip people like my wife and others who are just living out their vocations in that way? When Ferguson erupted, we had a council member from Ferguson who is a member of our church. He, I believe, was retired and had volunteered before any of this simply to be a councilman to do his civic duty. He didn't want there to be this, you know, huge, you know, civil unrest. He was just doing his, you know, his job, what he considered to be a good citizen. And so, you know, how do we continue to support those individuals? We had police officers in our congregation. My next door neighbor here is a police officer. Like, how do we support people in those vocations so that they can do so with integrity and do so with empathy and, you know, carry out the functions of the job, but really do so in a way that then also can help move us forward as a local community and then certainly as a nation.
Now, we all have in our own vocations, we're all called to do this. And I've heard it said by a number of pastors, don't tell me what a friend I have in Jesus until I see what a friend I have in you. Mm-hmm. And if we're living out our vocations for the sake of our neighbor, they're going to see that, which will ultimately lead to a conversation and a connection where there will hopefully be an openness to share the gospel. But we're all held accountable to do this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And there was a great phrase that Walt Wongren Jr. wrote in a book, a Lutheran pastor who served in the city. And he emphasized how he said, you need to learn the language of the city. That's point number one. And point number two is earn the right to be heard. And this extends not just for like urban issues, but even for how we proclaim the gospel. People aren't going to just assume, it's not just bequeathed you that simply by having, you know, being a pastor or being a Christian, that people are going to assume that you're there for them. You've got to show it. You got to show up, which is what you're saying here of being a friend for people and kind of earning that right to speak. And then when you do so, you're able to really, you know, shape lives because you're able to really give a word of encouragement or a word of correction or of caution as needed, as we're actually there for each other in very real, tangible ways. And this certainly is for everybody, not just for professional church workers, not just for pastors. And it's one that pastors need to do too, though. It's not just like we can say, well, I'm going to just focus on proclaiming the word of God and I will let my members worry about, you know, politics in the community and the neighborhood. As pastors, you got to get out there into the neighborhood. I love to run. I still run, and getting out to the neighborhood is a great way to meet people in the community by running. I have actually even found that there's a tremendously different interaction that I have, like right here. So this is in St. Paul. You know, when I drive in off the highway into work, there's a number of people who want, you know, are asking for money at the intersections. My relationship is immediately adversarial, not because I do anything to them, but just because I'm in a car and they're there, and like it's a transactional relationship when I'm in a car. The same people, when I go running, I'm out in the same, you know, I'm waiting at the red light. I'll talk with these guys. I'll know some of their names. Like, we have a more human interaction with each other simply because I'm not in a car, you know, and I'm also just like in my running shorts, like we're just connecting. And so I would say for us as all Christians, pastors, lay people, all the different church workers, that we need to find ways to just have those regular interactions with people. And that will move us far, far more than all the political action. So, about the protests and, you know, like, how do we get into this stuff? Let's just start connecting with each other on a one-on-one level of just remembering everybody's humanity and their humanness. I think we'll go quite far for us.
What can our leaders do, our church leaders do, to help motivate and inspire those of us who are in the pews, who are in their communities, to basically get off our duffs and do something about this?
Yeah, that is great. I would say our leaders can do a lot by example. It was interesting. I had a conversation with several students on Monday evening, and we wanted to find ways to better connect with all the different clubs at our university. This was a Christian, you know, group of Christian students, and we've invited people from the university to our events. And one of our director of Christian outreach students said, "Hey, we've got to show up for other people's stuff. We got to go to, you know, when the diversity center has their events, we got to show up for that. When we have a lot of Hmong students, when the Hmong student body, and many of them are Christian, when they have an event, we got to show up for it." And so I was like, "Yeah, that's a really good point." So our leaders, by, you know, it's not just telling us to do this, need to demonstrate, like, all right, here's how we're going to show up. I saw a group of students who were just ended up raking some neighbor's yards the other day because we had this warm spell. Everyone knew that the cold was coming. And so I had, they weren't doing this for class. They weren't doing this for credit. I just happened to know that they had kind of got the word out and got a group of students, and they were just doing it for some of the older members in the community. And just simply doing that kind of spark some joy. Like, I'm like, man, these students are great. Like, they're not only talented students in the classroom, but they're out there serving. And so I think the more that we can model that, the better. So demonstrating that through service and through doing it. I would say also continuing to invite, you know, people to become part of the conversation. How do we create space for other people? One example of this at Chapel of the Cross that I really enjoyed was a Bible study. We tried to approach this issue, and we did kind of a law and a gospel approach. So we were talking about racism in the church, and this was all before Ferguson. We were just, how do we deal with this as a community? We worked through the study of the CTCR document on racism in the church, which is very well done. And, you know, that had more of a law, like, all right, here's a sin, and how do we wrestle with this, and how do we repent of it, and then move forward. And then I worked with some of our African-American members to develop a Bible study around the teachings, the sermons that are written out by James Weldon Johnson. And it was, how do we allow and create space for an African-American Christian voice to really speak into this space and show, like, here's what we can learn from the Black Christian experience. And it was great. And we would read the scriptures, and then we would read James Weldon Johnson's sermons about the scriptures, and then we would discuss it, you know, and we would, and it was just a very enlivening experience together. So, you know, we can model this, we can serve, and then we can also, you know, create space, you know, more creative opportunities for us to bring people into the conversation.
I think if we can do that with humility and the recognition that we are all sinners, no one of us is better than anyone else in God's eyes. You know, He loves us all. We are all created specially by Him. And if we can start from there and be open to these conversations, we could go somewhere, but we have to be willing to do that, which for some, it can be a challenge. I mean, we're seeing that it's a challenge when you see conversations that happen online that I hope would never happen face to face. But we all have a lot of work to do as human beings, I think. And what you're saying, modeling service and getting out there and being open to these conversations could have a huge, huge benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly just simply having the conversation is going to help, right? Even if we come to the conversation and we don't have all the answers figured out, I certainly don't have all the answers figured out, but it's having the conversation and bringing people into relationship with each other is going to serve us very well as a church.
So as we start to wrap up, tell our listeners a bit about the program that you have at Concordia St. Paul on faith and justice in the city. Kind of give us an overview of what someone taking that class would experience and be equipped to do.
Yeah, great question. So this was really fun for me to develop right when I got here. It's a very experiential class. So kind of, and as I've been sharing today about, like, just getting out into the neighborhood. So for class, we go out into the neighborhood. We do a lot of walking tours. We'll spend time out in the community with people. The idea is that, you know, here are three themes that a lot of millennials and Gen Z students are really interested in. The city, we're in an urban location here. There's writers like Tim Keller, who's a pastor in Manhattan at Redeemer Presbyterian Church. But he makes this comment to say that we're becoming more and more urban, and cities are, you know, really shape the culture. I would add that Christianity began in many ways as an urban movement. So there's a real emphasis and interest for young people today on the city. Like, how can it be a place of energy and excitement and movement? So we got that as a nice starting point, and we have Minneapolis-St. Paul as our examples here. I've actually taken students in this class to Detroit, to Camp Restore in Detroit. They're doing some tremendously awesome work. I have a proposal right now for whenever we're done with this pandemic to come to St. Louis and go to Bethlehem Lutheran Church in North City, St. Louis, and to some other places in St. Louis and like the Old North neighborhood to kind of like say there's a lot of great cities that we can experience and learn from. We'll probably also stop in Chicago, First Emmanuel Lutheran Church there in the city and others around. How can we, you know, so there's a lot of examples. So city is a great starting point. How do we embody that? Justice, for sure, there's a lot of interest in justice and a lot of conversation about justice. And there's a, you know, and so we talk about there's different types of justice. What do we mean by justice? What is a biblical sense of justice? You know, how do we always go back to the scriptures? How do we go back to our Lutheran confessions and not just, you know, go with whatever the secular culture says for justice? But how do we take seriously the call for justice? And then faith. So I kind of work backwards with the title is Faith and Justice in the City, but we start with city, we care about justice, and then how does our Christian faith, how does our Lutheran understanding of how God's working in the world shape our lives and shape this whole conversation about justice and the city? So working with those three themes, it's been a lot of fun for me to learn and work with my students. We have a lot of students of color here. So having them also contribute to the conversation keeps me in check, make sure that I don't have all these assumptions. Maybe one of the immediate assumptions is I assume that, you know, we all need to be convinced that, you know, the city matters or justice matters. Well, when more than half my class grew up in the city, they're like, well, of course the city matters. Of course justice matters. Like, you know, and so what they really need to hear and share about is how, you know, God's alive and active in their lives. So we talk about Christian faith. Then I'll have other students who, you know, have a real strong Christian faith and they're like completely, they have not really ever encountered the city, you know, or just, so it's fun to have everybody in their classroom together and kind of work through those three themes. So it's very experiential. We'll read some great texts and then we just, and we read the scriptures and kind of work our way through those themes. I would also say, or I'd like to add that we have a director of Christian outreach program here. So some of our students who aren't necessarily looking to go serve in a congregational setting, but want to serve at a RSO, a registered service organization or a nonprofit, or any of these number of urban organizations, including ones like I mentioned, Camp Restore in Detroit, one of our graduates is serving there right now. You know, this is a place where they can get a nonprofit major or minor. They can learn Christian ministry and they can study theology and they can take a class like Faith, Justice in the City in an actual very diverse urban context. So from my perspective, you can get a lot of real, if you're really interested in this, CSP, Concordia St. Paul is a great place to be as we work to equip students for service in the church and then certainly in all of our vocations.
It's an incredible program, and it's going to be really neat to see the fruits of this program down the line as you send these students out with this background and this understanding of everything that you've mentioned, faith, justice, and the city, and all of that as a well-rounded Christian ready to take on their vocation wherever they end up being placed. So thank you for the work that you've done on that. It's very exciting.
Great. Thank you so much for your support and for having me on today.
This is great to have you. It's a great conversation, and it's one that we definitely need to have, and it needs to continue. So thank you for sharing your insights with us. Please give our greetings to everyone at CSP, and listeners, we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Concordia Publishing House podcast. I pray that this time was valuable to your walk with Christ. We'd love to connect with listeners on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Concordia Pub. Visit cph.org for more resources to grow deeper in the gospel.